Pretty good laugh last night in the postgame. Kevin Durant joined the TNT crew, and, of course, Charles Barkley not afraid to ask an uncomfortable question to Kevin Durant about Draymond Green. My favorite was when they showed the meme. Somebody tweeted in that little kid that's running down the corner, and it said, this is what Charles would look like if he ran into Draymond in the hallway. And that, you know, the kid, like, makes that face, and he turns around about face and goes the other way. Definitely had me roll on the couch last night. As a welcome to the show, Mr. Royce Young of ESPN. Royce, what'd you think of KD on set last night?
That was a great answer, I thought, from Durant, wasn't it? I just said, go down there and ask him yourself, Charles. You know, sit up here on your behind your studio desk and talk your tough talk. And like Shaq said, like the old Charles Barkley's going to be down there giving Draymond Green a piece of his mind, but he's kind of hiding behind his TV camera. And KD was like, "Hey, if you want to ask him if he's that annoying, go down there and ask him yourself." So, you know, I can tell you this: Kevin Durant though might have diplomatically dodged the question though, because I guarantee you Kevin Durant gets annoyed with Draymond Green because everybody that comes in contact with Draymond Green gets annoyed with him at some point. But that was a deft way for Kevin Durant to not have to answer that.
Well, the real question that was a good question, but the better question would have been, KD, how much did it upset you that Draymond's mom was calling you out on Twitter after game two?
I know.
Because KD saw that. It's not like he didn't not see it on the Twitterverse.
Wait, you think Kevin Durant saw something that happened on social media? No, I can't.
He probably responded on one of his burner accounts.
Yeah, that's right. I think that's some irony there in terms of the Charles Barkley discussion, Dusty. Why don't you go down there and tell him yourself? Yeah, Kevin Durant maybe should take some of that for his own advice. But, you know, I think, and look, and just in terms of last night's game even, I think it goes to show how Kevin Durant, I think, is always going to be a little bit of the oddball. For as long as he stays with the Warriors, with the way that, you know, you got Draymond's mom calling him out, you got the fact that Kevin Durant played wonderfully in games one and two, and there were some Warriors fans that were a little bit critical of the way that he isolated. You got, you know, like you said, Draymond's mom was upset with some of the isolation. And Steph Curry was a complete wreck in those games. He was bad in games one and two.
But they made excuses for Steph Curry.
Exactly.
It's his knee.
They're so committed to carrying the water for Steph. They're defending his deplorable defense. Whatever it might be, Warriors fans are committed to Steph Curry. And Steph has won 18-point quarter, and Warriors fans are just beside themselves over it. So I think it's kind of, you know, Kevin Durant already knows this because, look, he stepped into what the Warriors had already built. But that is Steph Curry's team. That is his city. That is his building, as Steph let us everybody know last night. And Kevin Durant's just along for the ride. And if he's okay with that, and he continues to be okay with that, then it'll work out. My instinct says that eventually Kevin Durant's not going to be okay with that.
I think Draymond Green's the guy that's going to go out of that group. They're going to do what the gods of basketball want and ship him to Orlando, Milwaukee, or Sacramento. Because those other guys are more. Everybody else on that team is more talented than him.
Yeah.
But he's the glue, though.
He's the most unselfish player, and without him, I don't know that it would work to the level. It would not work to the level that it works right now. But he's the biggest pain in the arse of all those guys, and I think that one day, at some point in time, Charles is going to be right on this, where there's a drop in the bucket that finally breaks the dam. Yeah. I think he's going to be the guy.
My friend Ethan Strauss wrote a long story about Draymond Green. I think it was either before this season, last year or 2 years ago, just about kind of what a pain in the neck Draymond Green is just in general for the whole Warriors organization. So I do think that there will probably eventually be a breaking point, and it'll probably be over money. That's typically what it is. And when Draymond's up for a contract, look, the Warriors are going to sit there and say, look, you're not really a max guy anymore. I mean, I know you were close to it. I don't think Draymond's got a true max right now. He's very, very close to it, and they're going to have this discussion with him. And you know that Draymond Green's not going to be the type of guy that says, oh, that's okay, you know, I'll just take what you guys are offering. You know, Draymond Green's going to be like, I want my money. I want what I'm owed. I'm a defensive player of the year. You better pay up. And I think the dam is going to break eventually, and it's going to spill over. So I think you're exactly right, Mark. I think it's more of a matter of when, not if, with Draymond Green. But again, within the context of the Warriors, you can make a case from night to night that Draymond Green is their most valuable player for what he provides them, what he enables them to do, the lineup that they can play. He is a fantastic, versatile weapon. But you take him and you insert him on another roster, and it looks completely different. And I think that just goes to show, you know, the difference it can make. You see that in Oklahoma City with Andre Robertson. within the context of a certain roster, this guy can be really effective and really successful. You take him and you go put him on the Sacramento Kings, and he's going to look like a train wreck. And so that just kind of goes to show what roster construction and roster makeup and the factors that it plays.
You know, Houston played like junk last night. The turnovers, the misses at the rim, the missed layups are just, they have no chance of beating Golden State if they're going to play like that. Hard enough, even if they play well, to beat Golden State. But the thing that I was most impressed with from the Golden State side, Steph didn't have it going early from three. He started 1-7. And I thought that, you know, his ability to get to the basket to start the second half, and then he got an and one. And he made that free throw. And I remember thinking as he made the free throw, I wonder if this him seeing the ball, shooting a shot go in, if it's going to lead to something. Next thing I know, he knocks down three more threes before the quarter's over. But even though it wasn't going right for him for 2.5 games from the perimeter, he stayed with it, and he was hell-bent on getting his shot to fall. And he did it by being aggressive and getting to the basket. So I thought that was impressive. And now Houston's got a whole nother world to deal with now that Steph Curry has arrived in this series and is comfortable and in rhythm.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, nobody opens floodgates like Steph Curry does. And while, you know, a lot of people were questioning him, and like we talked about, Dusty, they were wondering if he's hurt, what's going on with him. Look, he was just not shooting the ball well. Like, maybe he's not completely 100% right now. But, again, you know, it's the cliche everybody's going to mention that nobody technically is. Look at Paul George, what he was playing through. He had a bum knee and a bum elbow and on top of a bruised hip that he was trying to play through against the Utah Jazz. But that's just what you deal with in the postseason. And you can, you know, sometimes people will make excuses for you and try to back you up for it. But a lot of times people are going to judge you on the performance that you have. And Steph Curry showed in that third quarter he's completely capable of erupting and being the Steph Curry we all know. So, I think that when you look at the Rockets and what they have in front of them now, we talked about it the other day, Dusty, that we both agreed game three was going to be a tough one for the Rockets to get. It's game four to me was the one that they have to look at, because the Warriors were going to be teed up and ready in their building to respond in the way they did. Now, I didn't expect a 40-point win necessarily. I did kind of expect an emphatic win. And I think the Rockets maybe kind of felt that themselves in the second half and kind of pulled it back a little once Steph erupted. And they said, look, we're playing for game four. We need one of these two, and this is one of those Warriors nights. And the Warriors have those nights where all those shots go in, and you just can't stop it. And now you got to regroup, you got to get back to the drawing board, and you got to try to figure out how you can get game four.
Jeremy Grant told Woj on Friday that he would be interested in coming back to Oklahoma City. I think Dusty and I differ a little bit on what Jeremy Grant's worth. I think it's
a little
less.
$6 to $8 million a year. You said
six. It's lower. I think it's close to the six or lower than six, close to that.
Yeah.
I don't think it's eight. I don't think it's anywhere near that. What do you think the market is for him?
Yeah, that's an interesting topic, because I think there's a good case to be made for both. I probably lean, just based on where teams are kind of structuring their cap, I think there were a lot of lessons learned from the summer of 2016, and a lot of teams are feeling that right now because the cap space is a lot more limited. And what you've seen within the NBA is – you know, there's kind of this there's this massive gap between the exception players and the max players. And those guys that fall in the middle, the Jeremy Grants of the world, are going to have a hard time getting paid. And so I kind of lean towards the fact that he's going to be on the lower end of that scale, you know, in the $5 to $6 million range. The fact what he's got going for him is he's exceptionally versatile. And I think what's going to intrigue teams and what could pump up his value into that $8 million range is you can play Jeremy Grant at four positions. The Thunder played him at four positions this year. He was their tried-and-true backup center all year long. He's probably most comfortable playing as a stretch power forward. He can play a little small forward. And the Thunder at different times slotted him in kind of as a shooting guard, you know, at least on the defensive end. So, you know, I think that that's going to be something that teams might look at to say that we're willing to pay this guy. But again, he's one of those roster construction guys. I don't know that you can just go out and commit, you know, a solid chunk of your salary cap to Jeremy Grant and expect that to make a huge dent in the win-loss record. Jeremy Grant's a guy that you've got to put around other players, and you're going to already have a whole – and if you're going to get the most out of Jeremy Grant, you're going to have the majority of your salary cap already locked up in three or four other guys. So I think that more than likely he's going to fall probably in that $5 to $6 million range.
So, okay, I was reading an article, and it's basically saying that if – it was suggesting that if Paul George resigns, the likelihood of Jeremy Grant being Oklahoma City is not very good at all. as much as anything, because they're going to be in such a luxury tax. Say it's $5 million a year, $6 million a year.
Yeah.
That's going to be way more than that. So is it possible, is it feasible for Oklahoma City to somehow come away with both? And one more, does the Jerami Grant discussion, does that really begin once that first domino and Paul George falls?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that to the second part, Dusty, I think that Paul George is going to have an influence on this, on what he decides. If he does not re-sign with the Thunder, I have to think the Thunder are going to do what they want, you know, do what they can to keep Jerami Grant. I think that you know, exponentially increases the likelihood of it. But I would not say that it's 100% over with. If Paul George re-signs, they can't keep Jerami Grant. You know, anything that you hear from the Thunder organization, I think Brett Dawson of the Oklahoman wrote about this a couple weeks ago, kind of laying out the financial outlook of the Thunder and basically the money that they've spent over the last decade, the money that they've saved, what they have available to them, the value of the franchise. You know, we talked about the gambling thing the other day and the influence that's going to play. The salary cap might go up a little bit. The Thunder have some money right now, and they've got it set aside, and they're ready and willing to pay this roster. So whether or not Jerami Grant is included in that group, I think, is part of the question. But I think if Sam Presti decides that Jerami Grant is an important part of this team being able to compete at the highest level in the Western Conference, they're going to re-sign him, and I think that they're just going to pay the dollar amount that it requires. But I think that that's the question that they're going to have to answer, is paying him $7 million a year, which is really going to equal $13.5 million a year. Is that worth it? Is that going to put them over the top versus what they might be able to get with somebody else?
Any big news out of the combine? I saw Dante DiVincenzo had a really good couple of games in the 5-on-5.
Crazy vertical leap. Yeah.
And yeah, he had the best vertical leap there, and he hasn't even decided to get an agent yet, man. But I loved him in the NCAA. But anyone turn heads?
No. I mean, like, look, you know, a lot of the big-name players don't really participate in it. But, you know, there's a lot of interesting discussion. You know, there was some talk, and I heard the same thing, that, you know, the Thunder met with Trae Young, the Thunder met with Michael Porter Jr., which, you know, makes people's ears go up, I think, to be like, whoa, what are they doing? They trying to trade up? Really, a lot of it is, they might be willing to trade up. You know, the Paul George situation could come into play there, Mark. You know, it could be the type of thing where, you know, I've thrown out the idea that Paul George wants to go to Cleveland, and Cleveland's got the number 8 pick, and maybe there's some, you know, compensation involved with that first-round pick. Well, I don't know.
The Thunder take George Hill's salary or something like that?
Or it could be Kevin Love in that pick. I don't know. That seems like a whole lot.
Sign me up for that if that's a deal.
You know, I don't know. I'm just saying that there's – you know, you could make a case within that or something. But anyway, but the other factor is that this is your only chance to sit down with these players and get to know them. You know, granted, it's when they're 20, 21, 22 years old. But, you know, the Thunder are going to build a file on these guys. They're going to build a file on Michael Porter Jr., and they're going to sit there. And if there, you know, comes a day when he's 27 and the Thunder want to trade for him, well, they can go back and they can refer to the fact of, like, okay, this is what we've got on the guy. This is the background information that we have. So when you hear that the Thunder are meeting with these guys or working out with these guys, yeah, they don't have a first-round pick right now. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're trying to trade up to get the guy, but really what they're doing is just doing their homework.
Royce, who wins tonight? I like Cleveland.
Yeah, I like Cleveland. I mean, I think that they showed in Game 3, Dusty, that why you don't dance on LeBron James's grave when it might look like it. And they look so much more comfortable on their home floor. Kyle Korver, J.R. Smith, George Hill, down the line, all these guys look so much more comfortable when you get them in that building. So I think that this goes back to Boston 2-2, and Game 5 will be set up for just a complete bloodbath between those two teams.
We like bloodbaths here on the Monster of the Midday. We also like you, Royce Young. We'll talk to you again on Wednesday. Thank you for the great insight and information, my friend.
All right, you guys got it.
Royce Young, ESPN. Did you happen to notice what he did there with the contract to Jerami Grant, Mark? He's so crafty. He sided with you, said he's more on the $5 to $6 million.
I did hear that.
But then later when talking about it, he said, you know, for Jerami Grant, $7 million a year contract, per se. So then he cut it right in the middle. So we're going to have to set an over-under at some point when this free – is the number $6 million? You think $6 million is the over-under on that?
I'm comfortable with that.
Okay. Well, we'll have to revisit that with Royce because he was, you know, he's kind of – he's over here, he's over there, he's right square in the middle. I think Jerami Grant, you want to have him in Oklahoma City, but, man, you're going to be paying – some serious coin if you're in the luxury tax for that contract of Jeremy Grant. It'll be whether it's $5, $6, $8 million a year. If you sign Paul George and you're paying Jeremy Grant, it's going to be much, much more than $5, $6, $7, $8 million a year in real money.